Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. And yes, I'm hoarse today. Too much yelling at a Cavaliers game last night. In any case, we have a great guest for you. This is the B segment, 935B, on the podcast, You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. The guest, well, I'm going to let him introduce himself, other than to say his name is Jay Feinberg. But before I get to what he's done and why he's a guest, let me just find out a little about his education. Jay, you went to Dickinson College, and you graduated magna cum laude and Phi Beta Kappa, which means he's a smart guy. Then how did you get into the field relating to stem cells?
So actually, when I graduated from college, my direction was into the field of law. So I was accepted into law school. But the direction that ultimately happened with marrow and stem cell transplantation has to do with the fact that I was about a week after I was diagnosed with, after I went to law school, started going to law school, I was diagnosed with leukemia and told that my only hope of a cure was a bone marrow transplant. So that kind of changed what I was doing in my life at that time.
So here you are, 22 or so, is that right? And you all of a sudden got a very bad diagnosis. You got a acute leukemia diagnosis. They said the only hope of cure was to getting a marrow transplant. And this is from, whatever it is, 28 years ago, 1995, if I remember correctly. So what did you next do?
Yes.
Tell us how you developed this area.
Yeah. So, you know, like a lot of patients, I was diagnosed in a local community hospital. At the time, I was living in New Jersey, and I was referred to a large comprehensive cancer center. It happened to be in New York City, and was told at that time that I was not a that. Obviously, in order to have a transplant, you need a donor. And I was told at that time that I was not a a match with either of my two siblings. There's a 30% chance that you'll match a family member and a 1 in 4 chance that you'll match a sibling. And none of my other immediate family members were a match. So the doctors at the hospital had done a search of the bone marrow registry, which at that time was very, very small. You know, this is a registry, a global registry of people, volunteers who have agreed to be tissue typed and go into a database available to patients who are unrelated with the hope that they might be a match and be able to save the life of that individual. And a search was done for me in that database, and unfortunately, I didn't have a match in there either with any unrelated donors. And the doctor, you know, shared that there was a lot that they could do to keep me comfortable while I was sick, and they would put me on chemotherapy and keep me comfortable as possible, but encouraged me to go home and, you know, prepare my proverbial bucket list and do the things I wanted to do in life while I had the chance. And very fortunate that I have an amazing family, all of whom were in the exam room when I was receiving that consult, both my parents and my two siblings. And, you know, we questioned immediately, you know, why I couldn't find a match and why the doctor didn't think I would find a match. And what was shocking to us was that his response was simply because I was Jewish. And I just couldn't understand why my ethnic background would play a role in my ability to have an equal opportunity to find a donor and benefit from a transplant, until the doctor explained that your tissue type is inherited like your hair color, so your best chance of finding a genetic match is with someone who shares a similar ethnic background. And that's where it really all started. That's when we, as a family, decided that, you know, weren't going to wait for the inevitable, but instead be proactive. And if there was no match in the registry, we were going to grow the registry with healthy volunteer donors until that match was found. So that's really how it all started.
Now, does your registry, does your donor system, you founded a donor company, I guess. So let's go back, and when I say company, it's a nonprofit, as I understand it. But so you started this process. How did that, I mean, it must have been difficult to start it at first. How did that happen?
So, you know, it really started based upon that initial consult at Sloan Kettering in New York. And that's what prompted my family and I when we got back home in New Jersey around my parents' dining room table to be proactive. And we started a campaign, a grassroots campaign, to run donor drives with the hope of encouraging people to get tested and see if they were a match for me, as well as all of the other patients in similar circumstances. You know, I was in need, but there were lots of other people who were in need too. So we knew that what we were starting, this grassroots campaign, would not only hopefully help me, but also help a lot of other people in need. And we started with just a very small drive at our family's synagogue in New Jersey. And what was amazing was that on the day of that drive, and by the way, this is before, social media. It was before Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all of these things that we take for granted today. Back then, it was just conventional publicity, going to the printer and getting flyers made with my name and face on it and putting them up on telephone poles and in storefronts and asking synagogues to hand them out to members and make announcements. And that's the way that we did the publicity. And what was amazing was that on that day, first day of that donor drive, that first drive that we did, it was so crowded that when we arrived, that people were out in lines on the sidewalk into the street, and there were police there doing crowd control. And what it really reminded me was just how incredible a community can be when they come together for a common cause. Particularly when there's a human interest story behind it. And that's really how Gift of Life started, very much a grassroots campaign during the 4 years when I was searching for a donor and trying to find my match. And that drive led to drives being held all over the United States and in many other countries. And over the course of 4 years, we actually tested about 60,000 people. This was a blood test at the time. Today we do a cheek swab, but back then it was a blood test. 60,000 people who facilitated matches and transplants for hundreds of other people in need. But it wasn't until 4 years into the search that ultimately my disease started to accelerate. The chemo stopped working, and I was encouraged to go with a transplant with a donor who was a major mismatch with me. And interestingly enough, a young man, a college student from Chicago, for whom Gift of Life, the organization that my family started, had found a match for a friend of his from college, decided that he wanted to pay it forward and run one last drive for me. And his name was Benji, and we said, sure, Benji, go ahead and run the drive. The drive was slated to take place in Milwaukee. And on the morning of the drive, he brought some friends from the neighborhood to help and to volunteer at the drive, which was at a school in Milwaukee. And one of the people who came was a young lady, his next-door neighbor. And she came, and she handed out flyers at that drive, and they tested 130 people. And at the very, very conclusion of the drive, she decided to overcome her fear of needles and got the blood test. And it turns out that she was the very last person tested out of the 60,000 people at the very last donor drive that we ran, and she turned out to be my match. And my life was saved because of the kindness of a complete stranger. And that really is what resulted in Gift of Life becoming a registry, because after my transplant, I decided that there were just too many other people in similar circumstances, and we had built such a tremendous infrastructure, a volunteer network, and expertise in this field that we couldn't stop. So we became an official registry, accredited with the World Marrow Donor Association that accredits the medical organizations that run registries. And we're now the 14th largest registry in the world out of about 65, and continue doing what we've done for the past 2.5 decades. which is running donor drives and saving lives.
So you run the donor drives and save lives, obviously great, but you must have a physical structure, or don't you? And where do, are the donor drives just to get the registry, or do you actually collect, do the blood, bone marrow or blood collection and separation? How does that work now? And what is involved? So let's just say I become a donor, and you take a cheek swab from me to get my genetic makeup. What's the next step? Let's say I find a match, or you find a match.
Mm-hmm. So transplant centers all over the world search the registry, not just Gift of Life, but all of the public registries in many, many different countries. And we're part of that global database. So we perform a number of functions. First and foremost, we run the donor drives, where we take a simple cheek swab from people who are interested in joining the registry. Our target age range is 18 to 45, and in general, good health. Your blood type doesn't matter. And from that tissue type, cheek swab, we can obtain the volunteer donor's tissue type, and that's what goes into the registry, and that's what's searched by the transplant centers on behalf of their patients. And when a match is found, the transplant center will reach out to us and ask for that donor. And that donor then goes through a second set of tests that we call confirmatory testing. And if that confirmatory test indeed confirms that that person is the perfect match for that patient, then that donor gets called for a final stage in the process, which is to establish their medical eligibility and suitability to actually be a donor. And Gift of Life does that entire process from the beginning when we're recruiting donors all the way through the point where the donor is screened and goes for a physical exam to establish that they're healthy to donate. And the difference here is that up until now, the donors would actually donate at medical facilities that we contracted with in different parts of the country. Today, starting in just a couple of weeks, we're opening the very first registry-integrated stem cell collection center at our new headquarters in South Florida, which is a 22,000-square-foot facility that will house the headquarters for our registry, where our staff is made up of about 60 healthcare professionals who are responsible for the entire life cycle process. And the donors will very soon be able to donate in our new stem cell collection center. And one thing that I'd like to add is that many people, when they hear about bone marrow transplants, they think that it actually is a very scary procedure that involves a surgical procedure in a hospital. But what many people don't realize is that 80% of the time, when we talk about being a bone marrow donor, you don't even donate bone marrow. You actually donate stem cells that are taken from your bloodstream in a process that's very, very similar to donating platelets, except instead of taking platelets, we're really taking stem cells. So it really is a very, very simple process that just takes a couple of hours, and then the donor goes home at the end.
And that's what I wanted to get into. So it is a relatively simple process. You hook them up like you would to donate blood, but in fact you filter out and separate out the stem cells so that you can use those in a transplant. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct. And 80% of the time, it's that stem cell donation process, not taking bone marrow.
And the question is then, what motivates people to just sign up for a registry when they don't have a friend like your friend had who needed one or who was paying it forward? In other words, why is there an age range up to 45? Why isn't it go to 85? Mm-hmm. Why is it only 45? What's the difference? And how do we get more people involved?
So first and foremost, I think that people who join the registry do so because they're presented with the opportunity and they're altruistic. People who are, not as, into the altruistic aspect of doing this won't join the registry. It's people who are really committed and want to help save a life, and who are hoping that they'll get that phone call from us saying that they're the perfect match, because to them, it's like getting a call telling them that they've won the lottery in life. And those are the people who we want to join the registry, those people who are very, very committed and very dedicated and passionate about the cause. As far as the age range goes, the younger you are, the stem cells your body will produce. Of course, the younger you are, the more likely you will be to pass the physical exam. So transplant physicians will tend to select donors between 18 and 45, upwards of 85% of the time. So the older that you get, the less likely that transplant physician is going to select that individual as a donor. So we focus a lot of our recruitment on college campuses. Yep.
Yeah, what is it about the donor process that requires you to pass a physical exam? In other words, is it, I understand that you have more stem cells when you're younger, but you also implied that there's also a fairly difficult or detailed physical exam. I don't mean difficult from the standpoint of difficult and painful. I mean difficult to pass, meaning you've got to be in good health. What is it about the process that requires younger people, or is it mainly the youth is just because of the stem cell availability in their blood?
So they tend to be younger donors tend to be selected more often because their body produces more stem cells the younger they are. With respect to the physical exam, that's done for two reasons. The first reason is to make sure that it is safe for the donor to donate. And that has to do with making sure that they don't have any conditions that might pose a risk for them to do the donation process, even though it's as simple as donating platelets in a blood center. So when someone is doing a procedure, no matter how innocuous that procedure may be, we always have to make sure that we protect their health and well-being. The second part of the reason why we do the physical exam is to protect the health and well-being of the recipient of the stem cells. And we do that to make sure, first and foremost, that the individual doesn't have any communicable or infectious diseases that might be passed on to the recipient, things like hepatitis and other infectious disease agents. We do infectious disease testing at the time of the physical exam, and we also carefully examine the donor to make sure that they don't have any signs or symptoms of potential communicable disease. So that's very important, because if they did and that those cells went to the recipient would get that condition. So we do it for two reasons, one for the donor and one for the patient.
Now, tell us how people can get involved in your center. And I should say, we're talking with Jay Feinberg, who's the founder of Gift of Life and is now Gift of Life CEO and a 24-year transplant survivor. And so Gift of Life exists in Southern Florida, but you also have over, as I understand it, someplace like over 16,000 matches you've been involved in for bone marrow transplants.
Yes, and we've transplanted, I believe, about 3,400 patients, both in the United States and in other countries. We recruit donors nationally, so we're very much a national public stem cell donor registry. And the easiest way for people to become a donor is just to go to our website, which is giftoflife.org, and they can just on the website order a cheek swab kit, and we'll send it to their home. They can also look on the website to see if there's a donor drive that's happening in their community, and if there is, they can go over to the donor drive and do the cheek swab. So whichever way is most convenient for the individual, they can certainly do it either way.
And so to find the website, I assume giftoflife.org, but tell me what it really is.
It's www.giftoflife.org, and that's the website for the Gift of Life Marrow Registry, and they just have to click on the button that lets them get swabbed, and they'll order the cheek swab kit, and we'll send it to their home.
So I want to thank you, Jay, for participating and for coming on You, the Owner's Manual podcast. This is podcast 935B, Jay Feinberg is really an example of how adversity can lead to great gift for mankind. So hopefully you will take the opportunity of getting healthier now and actually going to giftoflife.org's website. If you're under 45, thinking about getting a donation swab. And if you're over 45, think about contributing either time or money to Gift of Life, giftoflife.org. Jay Feinberg, thanks very much for coming on. And thank Ben for good great engineering. And, of course, you for downloading us today. Thanks again.